Good morning, everybody. So good to see your smiling faces this morning. Welcome to West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, also known as WUF. So glad to see you here. My name is Scott Winters, and I will be your lay leader this morning. My pronouns are he and him, and I want to welcome you to this beautiful and dedicated and committed community. We welcome you, whether you are here for the first time or you have been here for hundreds of times. We're so glad you're here. You are welcome no matter who you are, no matter who you love, no matter how you identify your gender, if you do. We welcome you no matter how much money you have, your employment status, or your housing situation. And we affirm your spiritual practices, or if you have none. You are welcome here if your heart is full, you have lots of love in your life, and things are going well. And you're also welcome if things are falling apart, if you're grieving today, or if you're in pain. We welcome you into this beloved community of conscience and compassion. We especially want to welcome those who are here for the first time today. We invite you to fill out one of our welcome forms, and to do that, you can either do that in the foyer on paper, or you can scan the QR code on the chair in front of you with your phone. And that way, we can send you our weekly email that shares all the things that are happening in this community. And there's so much happening right now, and it's really fun to get connected and to make new friends and to see what it's like to be active in this beloved community. Today's service is being live streamed and will be recorded and saved onto our YouTube channel. You're also welcome to watch the service downstairs if you need a little bit more space to run around or just move some less sitting if you need to stand. For our online viewers, we offer an online coffee hour following the service for socializing and sharing. And a link to that was emailed in your order of service this morning. And for those of us here in person, please join us downstairs for our coffee hour for conversation and sharing about the service and just meeting new people. Our minister, Tracy Springberry, is on sabbatical. And today our guest speaker is WUF member Howard Baldwin. We're so glad you're here, Howard. Howard has been a member of WUF for 5 years and currently serves on the Board of Trustees as treasurer. At his previous UU fellowship in Sunnyvale, California, he served on the board as both secretary and president. In his 35-year career as a writer, he covered business, technology, and travel. Please join me in welcoming Howard. I now invite you to take a moment to greet each other and perhaps meet somebody new, and I'll call you back in just a minute. So much wonderful conversation and energy this morning. I just love your energy. And there will be more time for conversation after the service, too, so I hope that you continue to share any conversations that you started. And we now will have Rosie and Paisley, who are going to light our chalice together this morning. So our chalice lighting is by Reverend Tracy Johnson. Yes, good job. Thank you, Rosie and Paisley. Our chalice lighting is by Reverend Tracy Johnson, who is a UU minister, beacon of freedom. We kindle our chalice flame this morning, awakening the fire of our ancestors in our hearts. Beacon of freedom, held out to light the way. Light of reason illuminating the path. Spark of courage igniting our spirits. Aglow with hope for all that we endure together. Holy flame of times past, brighten this present moment, that we may be the love that is our center and our foundation. Both. Blessed be. Please join us in our opening affirmation.
Blessed be.
Let us open our eyes to see what is beautiful and what is wondrous. Let us open our minds to learn what is true and what is mysterious. Let us open our hearts to love one another and our neighbors. Our opening reading today is by Emma Goldman, who was a Lithuanian-born anarchist, revolutionary, political activist, and writer. Someday, men and women will rise. They will reach the mountain peak. They will meet, big and strong and free, ready to receive, to partake, and to bask in the golden rays of love. What fancy, what imagination, what poetic genius can foresee the potentialities of such a force in the life of men and women? Please stand as you are willing and able, as Spencer leads us in our opening hymn, number 170, We Are a Gentle, Angry People.
Our gentle, angry people, and we are singing, singing for our lives. We are a gentle, angry people, and we are singing, singing for our lives.
Spencer. This is the time in our service when we pause to reflect on the blessings and gifts that we've received from this abundant earth and the generous spirit of this community, and to consider what it is that we are grateful for. And I'm wondering if there were folks that might like to just speak out loud something that they're grateful for today. Grateful for a house you can stay in and to be cool in. Yes, Rosie.
I'm grateful to be in life with everyone.
Grateful to be in life with everyone. That's lovely. Thank you. Go ahead.
I'm grateful that we have air conditioning.
Yes, we're grateful that we have air conditioning here at WOOF. Yes, grateful for dinner guests. grateful for friendship, for sunshine, and for each other.
Having and being in the process of parenting and having parents who love me.
Grateful being in the process of parenting and for having parents who love you. Thank you. Yes, Paisley. Yes, grateful for our family that loves you. Thank you. Thank you. Our WOOF community thrives on this spirit of gratefulness. And the spirit of generosity is birthed through that spirit of gratefulness, where all are welcome here, no matter who we are. As Betsy plays our musical interlude, please consider the gifts you have to offer our WOOF community. Whether it be financial support, perhaps your time, your energy, your talent, perhaps your ideas, know that we all benefit and are grateful for your generosity. The hosts may now come forward to collect our financial offering. Thank you. Thank you for your generosity. Will you please join me in our affirmation of gratitude and giving? Let us be grateful when we are able to give, for many do not have that privilege. Let us be grateful for all those who share their gifts with us, for we are enriched by their giving. And let us be grateful even for our needs, so that we may learn from the generosity of others. And our special music today is by the one and only Bob Marley. Get up, stand up.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up.
Stand up for your
her.
I get to follow Barb Murphy.
Yeah, to follow Barb Murphy.
All right, I can follow. Thanks. You only have two children here?
No, there's more.
Well, I guess we can all be children if we want to, right? Look for me. Circles all around. Hello. The book we're reading is Circles All Around Us, written by Brad Montague and illustrated by Brad and Christy Montague. We begin by drawing a circle on the ground along each shoe. A safe little place for just one person, nobody in this circle but you. You could keep that circle closed to everyone but yourself, but that would be like a library with just one book on the shelf. So let's draw a bigger circle for you and your family to share. Now you see what all can happen in a circle full of care. See who's in this circle? We've got Granny Dot and Papa Bit, Barkley, and Uncle Hank, Great Granny and her cats, new cousins. It becomes a happier circle as more loved ones come to stay. And wouldn't it be even better if all your friends could come and play? So, here we go. So you stretched and draw your circle even bigger than it's been, and let a few more people know they're welcome to come in. It's gotten away from me. Excuse me, I'm new at this. Let a few more people you know come in. In the circles all around us, everywhere that we all go, there's a difference we can make and a love we can all show. Oh my, does anyone recognize any languages here? Yet there are still so many outside the circle who are different in all they do, though it feels slightly uncomfortable. Let's see, what have we got? We've got hello, ciao, guten Tag. Guten Tag. Oi. I didn't know that was a greeting. I say that a lot. Oi. We draw the bigger circle for them, too. It doesn't mean that circle is easy. It can get harder the more we share. I'm team cake. I'm team pie. Cake or pie? The big question. I'm really outgoing. I'm quiet and shy. That's me. I'm quiet and shy. But wonderful things can happen. Love is known and felt everywhere. Friendship donuts. As the time passes, our eyes open. We see others we really care for. And that's when we ask ourselves, oh, what's this circle really there for? So let us create bigger circles all around us for the rest of our days. Let our caring ripple out in a million little ways. In all the circles all around us, everywhere that we go, there's a difference we can make and a love we can all show. As our circles grow and grow. And we watch them wonder-eyed. Remember the first circle started with just the love you hold inside. I think we have a pretty big circle here at WOOF.
And sing our children out. We hold you in our love as you go, may your heart be at peace as you go, to nurture the spark of your precious life. We hold you in our love as you go. Hope everybody's ears are okay.
Did you want all of us out?
So we're going to gently move from that into our time of meditation and reflection. So I'd like to read to you this reading that I found that I thought was really fitting for today's service. And it's by Reverend Michelle LeGrave. She's a UU interim minister, and it's called In Betweenness. And we'll have some time for some silence to reflect after I read it. We, you and I, are in between right now. In between what was and what will be. In between who we were and who we will become. In between letting go and embracing. In between saying hello and saying goodbye. In betweenness. It's a thing. In betweenness is a time of fullness, a time of anticipation, a time of hope, a time of worry, a time of sadness. In-betweenness is a time of waiting. Waiting for news. Waiting for departure. Waiting for arrival. Waiting for death. Waiting for life. In-betweenness is a time of transformation. A time of reflection. A time of action. A time of growing. A time of becoming. During this time of in-betweenness, of knowing and not knowing, let us enter into this time of shared silence together. This is our little altar that we have with our chalice and some stones and some water. And as most of you are familiar with this ritual, it's something we do every week. And for those of you who are new, I'd like to share a little bit about this ritual. And it speaks to our community, and it speaks to who we are. This is our time of joys and sorrows. And it's a time to reflect on your own feelings, of what's in your heart right now, and also to possibly share, if you'd like to, with all of us. So it represents, this water and this bowl represents us. It represents us, our community, that we can hold all that we're experiencing. I know sometimes what we're feeling can be overwhelming, and there's so much that we can hold, but know that that can be a little bit lighter here in community. That we hold those joys, those celebrations of your life, new births, new commitments, good news, the things that we celebrate and the things that we are so looking forward to happening. And also the things that causes pain, the things that causes grief and loss, the pain in our lives. And sometimes we have both at the same time. And so this ritual is an opportunity to express that in a physical way by taking one of the stones or perhaps a couple of the stones and putting them into the water as a symbol and a representation of sharing with us this loving community that you're not alone. And I'll have the microphone if folks would like to share just briefly a little bit what's happening for them.
She's had multiple medical problems in the last decade or so, and her biggest comfort and joy is her little Yorkie. And her Yorkie is dying a slow death with her right now, and she's very, very sad. So this is for Gail and Winnie. And this is one for Joy, because I get to hang out with Paisley and Rosie today.
This is for my daughter, Shireen, who had to put down her cat after 18 years. So we need to relieve her sadness.
We have an inspection on a house we put a bid on Monday. This has been a very stressful period, and just appreciate being able to be here and be in comfort.
This is a stone of joy for my grandmother and the surgeon that kept her alive on the 4th.
If y'all could send positive thoughts to Harper for her healing process, I would appreciate it.
My stepdaughter and her wife are closing on their first house on Tuesday in Southeast Portland.
I have a joy that I wanted to share with the fellowship. I just returned from a trip to New York City where I had the chance to sing on stage at Carnegie Hall.
Oh my God. I'm letting go of something that has not been good for me, and it isn't easy, but I want to be free.
And for all the unspoken joys and sorrows that we hold in our hearts, this stone represents that for you. Let us now sing, "From You I Receive." Excerpt from Martin Luther King Jr.'s eulogy for the Reverend James Reeb. James Reeb, a white Unitarian minister, became nationally known as a martyr to the civil rights cause when he died on March 11, 1965 in Selma, Alabama, and after being attacked by a group of white supremacists. Reeb had traveled to Selma to answer Martin Luther King's call for clergy to support the nonviolent protest movement for voting rights there. James Reeb was murdered by the indifference of every minister of the gospel who has remained silent behind the safe security of stained glass windows. He was murdered by the irrelevancy of a church that will stand amid social evil and serve as a taillight rather than a headlight, an echo rather than a voice. He was murdered by the irresponsibility of every politician who has moved down the path of demagoguery, who has fed his constituents the stale bread of hatred and the spoiled meat of racism. He was murdered by the brutality of every sheriff and law enforcement agent who practices lawlessness in the name of the law. He was murdered by the timidity of a federal government that can spend millions of dollars a day to keep troops in South Vietnam, yet cannot protect the lives of its own citizens seeking constitutional rights. Yes, he was even murdered by the cowardice of every Negro who stood tacitly accepts the evil system of segregation, who stands on the sidelines in the midst of a mighty struggle for justice. So in his death, James Reeb says something to each of us, black and white alike, says that we must substitute courage for caution says to us that we must be concerned not merely about who murdered him, but also about the system, the way of life, the philosophy which produced the murder. His death says to us that we must work passionately, unrelentlessly, to make the American dream a reality. So he did not die in vain.
Thank you, Scott. Thanks to all of you for coming out in the heat. Believe me, I thought about phoning this in. And I'm sorry about the glasses. I did try and print it out as big as I could, but it would have come out with one word on every page for me to see it. All right, that's the end of the jokes, because this is a very serious topic. As a matter of fact, there were jokes in here, and I took them out. What would you do in an autocracy? 2 years ago, my wife Monica and I walked in the Lake Oswego 4th of July parade, which was held just this week. We were with a group called Respond to Racism. I carried a Black Lives Matter yard sign. As we headed home, out of the group, I might add, walking back up A Street, the main drag of Lake Oswego, a couple of women standing with their husbands started yelling at us, saying, "Portland's that way. Go back to Portland." I was still trying to remind myself that I wasn't supposed to swear at women when my lovely, intelligent wife simply expressed the most wonderful pun. She pointed at my sign and said, "Lake Oswego is this way." Now, it's important to note that I cannot politicize from the pulpit. That would threaten our nonprofit status. UUA guidelines state, and I quote, "Congregations and their representatives may engage in issue advocacy through activities such as educating and mobilizing congregations and the general public." So trust me when I tell you that everything I say will fall under those guidelines. So I'm not going to name names. I'm not going to say who's ahead in the polls, especially since that's a moving target and a target that's moving faster and faster every single day. Especially since the polls depend on likely voters, registered voters, disillusioned voters, double haters, and all manner of categories that I frankly had never heard of until this year. But there are extremists out there that don't seem to honor the Constitution, and maybe not even the 22nd Amendment, the one that established term limits. I'll just say that Adolf Hitler was democratically elected, and you know how that turned out. Which brings me to the title of my sermon, "What Would You Do in an Autocracy? How Will You Respond to Boost the Autocrat?" In my mind, a better word is kakocracy, which is also from the Greek, kakos meaning bad, government by the very worst possible. How would an autocracy or a kakocracy affect us? How much do you want to catastrophize? I already think that with gerrymandering and Supreme Court justices, primarily chosen by presidents who lost the popular vote, we're like the proverbial frog in the boiling water, and we're already sweating profusely. We're already seeing enough previews of coming distractions to be concerned. When it comes to women's rights, are we looking at a nationwide abortion ban, diminished access to contraceptives? When it comes to religion, are we looking at a ban on liberal religions like ours or the United Church of Christ? When it comes to economics, are we looking at CEOs inflating prices and shrieking food boxes because they no longer fear a toothless federal trade commission? To continue with the frog analogy, the temperature always has been somewhat warm in this country. There's always been racism. There's always been fringe groups that danced frantically on the far edges of society. Today, they are amplified and galvanized by information silos. To me, the worst thing that's happened is that kind of behavior has become normalized, like those women in Lake Oswego. People feel they have permission to harass others, even here in Oregon. Especially here in Oregon, I might say. 150 years ago, blacks were constitutionally banned from Oregon. The town I live in was a sundown town, meaning that blacks weren't allowed on the streets after dark. 100 years ago, the mayor of Portland, the governor of Oregon, were members of the Ku Klux Klan. At First Unitarian Church downtown, according to its historian, two Klan members entered a Sunday morning service and the minister had to ask the ushers to escort them out. So what will you do? How will you protest? How far will you go to register your dissatisfaction? Write your representative in Washington? Some of us are represented in Congress by a Democrat. Some of us are not. And some of us may just be too comfy to care, too comfy to poke at that liberal Northwestern Oregon bubble we live in for fear of popping it. We worry about our jobs and our kids and our pets, and we don't want anything to threaten them. That's pretty understandable. Almost 50 years ago, a very prescient screenwriter named Patty Chayefsky wrote a movie called Network, one of whose characters was a broadcast journalist casting a spell over his audience. The character's name was Howard Beale. He railed, "We know things are bad, worse than bad. They're crazy. It's like everything everywhere is going crazy, and we don't go out anymore. We sit in the house, and slowly, the world we are living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please, at least leave us alone in our living room. Let me have my toaster and my TV and my steel-belted radials, and I won't say anything. Just leave me alone." I'm going to be perfectly honest here. I don't know what I'm going to do either. I don't have the answers. But I'll tell you what we do have, and that's a whole lot of inspiration from history. I have it in family history, which I'm going to tell you about. We have it in Unitarian history, which I'm going to tell you about. You've already heard some of it this morning. We have a way forward. It's not going to be an easy path to follow because Unitarians have died on that path. But it gives us something to think about. Let me start with my own family, or more accurately, my wife's family. My late father-in-law, Ewald Deltzeit, was born in Germany in 1933, the year Hitler came to power. His father, Josef Deltzeit, had served Germany in World War I and suffered debilitating injuries. Based on his experiences, he was no fan of war, and he was no fan of the Third Reich. He lived in the rural farming town of Guldenthal in southwestern Germany. During World War II, he encountered AWOL German soldiers traversing his remote farmland. He would give them clothes, burn their uniforms, and send them south toward Switzerland. If the Nazis found out, he and his family would surely have been executed, but he did it anyway. Which, I have trouble telling that story. I'll probably have trouble telling other stories too. Brings me to my favorite story about my father-in-law. In late September of 2001, his brother was turning 80. If you know German culture, you know that the zero birthdays are very, very important. So to help him celebrate, Monica and I, her siblings, and my father-in-law, who had left Germany in 1959, all planned to attend the party. When the terrorists attacked on September 11th and U.S. airspace closed, our trip was put on hold. But after U.S. flights resumed, so did our plans. Someone asked my father-in-law about the wisdom of this, said, "Aren't you afraid of terrorists?" And he said, "I grew up under the Nazis. Terrorists don't scare me." Let me tell you another family story, this time on my side. In California in 1963, the legislature passed something called the Rumford Act, which made it, quote, unlawful to discriminate in the rentals, sale, financing, or leasing, or housing because of race, color, religion, national origin, or ancestry, end quote. Racists in California were so incensed at this law that using California's direct initiative process, first enacted by progressives early in the 20th century, they gathered enough signatures to put Proposition 14 on the ballot. Its goal was to revoke the Rumford Act that had made discrimination illegal. At this time, my father had had his own real estate agency for 10 years. Some of you, especially in the men's group, have heard me disparage my father, so what I'm about to say may surprise you. My father was a wretched parent. He was a haphazard Unitarian, but he was a good man. At the risk of his business, at the risk of alienating clients, he publicly protested Proposition 14. He planted a No on 14 sign in front of our house. He walked picket lines. He put his career on the line. As a native Californian, I'm embarrassed to say that the measure passed with 65% of the vote. It was only after the state Supreme Court later overturned it because it was discriminatory that it was thrown out. But my father, like Monica's grandfather, put his beliefs into action. That's inspirational to me. That's just my family, and then there's our extended Unitarian family. Going back to the days preceding and during the Civil War, and I so don't ever want to say the first Civil War, Unitarian ministers and members were at the forefront of abolitionism. Theodore Parker influenced abolitionist leaders of other church denominations, including William Lloyd Garrison, as well as people like Elizabeth Cady Stanton, Julia Ward Howe, and Louisa May Alcott. After the passage of the Fugitive Slave Act, Parker had a slave in his house, hid a slave in his house, until he could arrange for her passage to Canada. In 1854, he led protests to prevent another slave being forcibly returned to his master. The protest led to the death of a jailer, and a grand jury indicted Parker for obstructing a federal marshal. The charges were later dropped. Moving ahead to the 20th century, I'm sorry to say that when I contacted the people in charge of religious education at the UUA, no one could offer any examples of how UUs stood up for the constitutional rights of the Japanese when they were trampled during World War II. So we're clearly not perfect. But the 20th century still holds inspirational examples for us. Take Norbert Schoppeck, who originated the tradition we still practice, known as the Flower Communion. Trained as a religious leader in both Europe and the United States, Schoppeck was hailed as the founder of Unitarianism in what was then Czechoslovakia in 1930. His influence was such that in March of 1941, the Gestapo arrested him for listening to foreign broadcasts, which was a capital crime, and he was taken to prison. He was eventually transferred to the Dachau concentration camp, where he was killed in 1942. Unitarianism has had other martyrs. During the Civil Rights Movement, as Scott told you, a Unitarian minister named James Reed left his wife and four children behind in Massachusetts, and with about 10 other ministers from the Boston area, joined Martin Luther King and other religious leaders in Selma, Alabama in March of 1965 for a walk to Montgomery. Those who know their history know that King and the marchers were prevented from crossing the Edmund Pettus Bridge on a Tuesday. They stayed in Selma to try again 2 days later. But on that Tuesday night, Reed went out to dinner with two other ministers and then headed to a planned speech by King. They were attacked by a group of white men, one of whom hit Reed with a heavy stick. He died 2 days later, the day the protesters were supposed to cross the bridge again. Reed may be the most famous Unitarian to sacrifice his life in protest, but he's not the only one. Viola Liuzzo was a Detroit housewife who also went to Selma in March of 1965. She was driving protesters between Selma and Montgomery when Klan members shot and killed her. She had five children. So, tough call. Neither Reed nor Liuzzo expected their trip to Alabama would be their last. But their sacrifice brings us back to the question, what would you do in an autocracy? What if that couple on the main street of Lake Oswego had attacked us with bats instead of words? What if people like that come to your house and tear down your "In This House We Believe" yard sign? What if they tear down the pride flag that flies in front of my house every June? What if hooligans come at us here? We have a welcoming pride sign facing the street. We've been catcalled by passing drivers at our Black Lives Matter protests out on Olson Road. Two things to remember. There is a klaxon horn at the back of the sanctuary by the audiovisual equipment, and there is an exit in the
back with the sanctuary, and it is hidden as if Maxwell Smart wanted to go through it. It's right here. Push it. Leads that way if you need to come this way. Remember how I worried about extremists normalizing bad behavior, how certain people have attacked protesters so much that it's given people who might have held their prejudices and biases close to their breast carte blanche to speak out in public? I think that's exactly what we need to do. We need to normalize protest in support of what we, as you use, are called to advocate. We need to be visible too, to show people who want to protest autocracy that they are not alone, and in fact, there's more of us than there are of them. There's more to that in sequence and network, by the way, and it goes like this. We sit in the house, and slowly the world we're living in is getting smaller, and all we say is, please at least leave us alone in our living rooms. Let us have my toaster, my TV, and my steel-belted radials, and I won't say anything. Just leave us alone. And this is what Beale said after that. Well, I'm not going to leave you alone. I want you to get mad. I don't want you to protest. I don't want you to riot. I don't want you to write to your congressman because I wouldn't know what to tell you to write. I don't know what to do about the depression and the inflation and the Russians and the crime in the street. All I know is that first, you've got to get mad. You've got to say, I'm a human being, goddammit. My life has value. Everyone's life has value. That's what we believe as you use. We talk about justice, equity, and compassion in relations, the use of democracy, the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. That includes us. If the election doesn't go our way in November, even if it does go our way, but more anti-democratic extremists get or retain power, we have to speak up. We have to get mad, and we have to stay mad. We may have to be as obnoxious as the people who annoy us, and we may have to be willing to go to jail to lose a job or lose a friendship. But we have to talk about what we cherish, whether it's the Constitution or the inherent worth and dignity of every human being. It's a tough choice, and we may not see it until it's thrust upon us, but we have to be ready to speak up and speak up loudly. Thank you.
Thank you, Howard. Let's continue that conversation after the service, please. Our closing hymn is Love Will Guide Us, number 131. Please stand as you are willing and able.
Love will guide us. Peace has tried us. Hope inside us will lead the way on the road from love will guide us through the hard night. If you cannot sing like angels, if you cannot speak before thousands, you can give from deep within you. You will change the world with your love. Love will guide us, peace has tried us, hope inside us will lead the way on the road from greed to giving. Love will guide us through the heart.
Please remain standing. Our benediction is by Margaret Mead, who is an American cultural anthropologist. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. I extinguish this flame, but not the vision and compassion of our faith. May they stay with you until we meet again. Let us now sing Carry the Flame together.